I'm going to talk about the European peace movement this evening, and I have probably about 50 minutes time because the service will start at 8. I want to encourage you to interrupt me, to ask questions, to get into a discussion. I don't want to dominate the forum here. I think it's a risk to talk to you as a German on peacemaking, especially as my folks, my fathers and grandfathers, are quite famous for their violence. They have initiated 2 world wars. They have killed about 6 million Jews. And me being here and talking to Americans what peace is about, it's kind of funny. I hope that you hear me as a brother in Christ, the first line, and that you're willing and open to hear. The second thing is that America is a country where I can do this. I can give a presentation on the peace movement, and I'm pretty aware of the fact that I couldn't do that in the eastern part of Europe. And so far I'm very appreciative of this so-called freedom of speech here. I've been working in Washington, D.C. for a year now in the Center City Congregation, LCA. About 4 blocks from the White House and just on the border line between the rich and powerful America and the so-called low-income neighborhoods. This is where I got my American experience from, and maybe something will come through the next minutes. I do not know everything about the European peace movement, and I hope that we have other very knowledgeable people sitting here that you will help me then if questions come up I cannot answer. I will try to answer all questions you have, even those I will not cover, like what is the Green Party in Germany, or what about the elections in England or West Germany this year, and so on. Or what about violence, what about what is coming up this fall or this winter. Let me give you a very brief outline of what I'm going to do. I'll focus on Germany because it's the most central part in Europe and where the things are happening actually now. And I'll talk about the history, very brief, to make you understand why there is a peace movement. I'll then point out to that map behind me, and thirdly, we'll talk about the reasons for the peace movement in 4 points. And perhaps we can have a discussion round after that, and then I would like to talk about the church's involvement in different European countries, the church's involvement too in the Eastern Bloc states, especially again in the German Democratic Republic, which happens to be a communist state. So far, my grandmother, who is dead by now, she made a quite typical experience in her life. She was born under the Kaiser in the last century, in 18-something, and she lived through different periods of history. She started with a monarchy. Then she experienced from 1914 to 1918 the First World War, the first experience of losing loved ones, of friends. Then the political system changed. The monarchy was abolished. The Weimar Republic came about in Germany. This lasted about 14 years. In 1933, Hitler took power. In 1939, the Second World War started until 1945. Again, the experience of death, of destruction, of loss. I don't know if you as Americans can imagine what it means for people sitting in the basements of houses and being firebombed. This is one thing I noticed here, that this is something that's very far away for the average American person, because there has never been a war in this country fought in this century with modern technology. This is very, very important to just to have in mind, because that feeds the longing for peace of so many Europeans. After 45 till 49, Germany was occupied by the Allies under American, French and British rule. So this was about the seventh phase my grandmother lived through, the seventh political change, occupation. And then in 49, the Federal Republic was founded, and in the eastern part of Germany, the German Democratic Republic. So that finally was the eighth political form or sociological form my grandmother lived in. And again, two world wars, twice destruction, twice the loss of loved ones, twice the experience that Germany itself and Europe, other European countries, have become a battlefield. And that has an enormous impact on people's mind, and by the way, on the religious mind or the religiosity too. Part of the secularization, which you have might heard of in Europe, is that Europeans are religiously skeptical because of suffering, because of death, because they are became insecure whether God is really good and caring. In 45, with the impression of war, people said no war anymore. And polls showed in the mid-50s that a vast majority of the population opposed what became a political issue now, the rearmament of West Germany. The plans had been that Germany should become a non-militarized state, or stay that after the occupation and after the war. In 56 we got our federal army, and at the same time the eastern part of Germany got the so-called National People's Army. Once the army was established, 2 years later, the issue came up, shall we have nuclear weapons on German soil? This is very logic. Once you have the army, once you're integrated into the NATO, the next step is how far does the rearmament go? And so in 58, 57, 59, we had a lot of discussions about the nuclear armaments in the country. And I would like to read you a statement of the Protestant churches of 1959 called the Heidelberg Thesis. This is a very significant text. While affirming that a nuclear war could not possibly fulfill the conditions of a just war, the Commission stated that the Church must recognize the participation in the effort to secure peace and freedom through the possession of atomic weapons as at present a still viable Christian mode of procedure. It acknowledged the great risk in this approach, the need to avoid use of the weapons, and the need to view their possession as a temporary measure. It thought in terms of a grace period. during which steps should be taken toward establishing peaceful world conditions and toward multilateral disarmament. Thus, in the future, possession of nuclear weapons would not necessarily be viewed as an option for Christians. What they are saying is that nuclear weaponry is temporary. It's a joining this kind of defense is a still viable Christian mode of procedure. And they thought in the terms of grace period. God gave us some time, some period of grace to negotiate or to get rid of that stuff. But this time could end, and there could be a time when Christians have to oppose possession and use of nuclear weapons. That was in 59, and that's one of the roots of the European peace movement, this text. In the 60s, the opposition towards nuclear armament slowed down. We had the Easter marches all over Europe, but then the Vietnam War came up, and the counterculture movement in Europe too. So there was a kind of break in discussion of the issue. And environmental issues were discussed. How do we deal with pollution of our environment and so on? That was the topic. It was not nuclear weaponry. It was rather nuclear power plants in the mid-70s. And this is kind of linked to the peace movement coming up in the late 70s or early 80s. The fight against a certain kind of destructive technology. For many people, it makes no difference if you destroy the world by power plants and by nuclear waste, or if you destroy them by missiles. I should expound that more, but I can't now. In the late 70s, we have a new development in technology, as you all know, the so-called third technological revolution, which are the computers, computerizing of the world, microcomputers, and so on. The impact on everything is obvious on production. We have robots producing cars. We can write letters with computers. We don't need secretaries anymore and all that. And this is still developing. We are not at an end of this development. But this development had strong influence on weaponry, because the weapons became more sophisticated, more accurate, more powerful. So a new generation of weapons, for example, the neutron bomb is one of them, came about. And in 1979, the NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, decided to have a new generation of weapons deployed, the so-called Pershing II and the cruise missiles, as a counteraction to the deployment of Soviet missiles with the name SS-20. And the NATO general said, we have a kind of double-track decision. We negotiate and we build up both. If the Soviets agree to get rid of theirs, we'll not deploy them. But if they don't, then we'll deploy in 83. And this is the year we're in now. And this is what the Geneva talks are about. You sometimes hear about in the news. So there were about 108 Pershing IIs, very sophisticated weapons, and more than 468 cruise missiles supposed to be deployed in Europe this year and next year. And now let me show the map. I hope you can see it. Better take the chair away. 108 new missiles, Pershing II plus cruise missiles, in a country which is from the south, Garmisch That's the city a lot of Americans know is about here, and that's Hamburg up there. It's smaller than California and probably smaller than Washington State in terms of square miles. We have, if you see the map, just see the colors. I hope you can do that from that distance. These are all nuclear sites in West Germany. So remember, the country is about the size of California or smaller. And you cannot go in West Germany more than, let's say, 30 miles or 40 miles without passing a nuclear site. Commando installation, missile silos, or nuclear power plants. I feel that this map is just striking to make you understand why the Germans and other people in this area are just upset with the idea that there are another generation, additional missiles supposed to be deployed.
Whose missiles are those? Are they various countries' missiles? Are they?
They are all American.
All American.
All American. The German Federal Army does not have the key, or not. They don't have the keys to nuclear missiles. This is one of the. It's part of the game. People still are suspicious of the German military.
When you say commando, do you mean tactical?
Sorry?
When you said commando weapons, did you mean tactical?
No, I mean commando installations. So this means like Lance missiles, or what they call Nike Hercules, or Pershing 1A, Pershing 1AB, and then, much more. So I think we have, to give you another idea of the numbers, we have about 1,000 and more nuclear warheads deployed on West German soil. Altogether in the world, we have about 8,500 on the western side, or American side. So a good share of them is dense packed on West German soil, and the number is supposed to be higher, or will increase later this year or earlier next year. I feel that this is a very striking map. We live in a very militarized country there. Yes?
I was reading a book by Dorothy Soyla called The Arms Race Will Kill Us, Even Without War, and she said, likens the deployment of missiles in Germany to the Cuban Missile Crisis in the United States. I mean, Russia views it as their Cuban Missile Crisis with absolutely, so close and so many.
Yeah, okay, I'll mention that now. The reasons for the European peace movement, I made 4 points, there are probably more reasons. But first, the change in nuclear doctrine in the 70s. The nuclear doctrine was, although the change was planned for about 20 years, but it was published in the mid and late 70s. People, or the generals, talked about the deployment or employment of nuclear weapons, and meaning, talking about, I quote just now some parts of the documents, conventional nuclear operations or flexible response or constrained nuclear use or a limited nuclear war or tactical employment options. So what has happened, what the change is that what was called MAD, like MAD, the mutual assured destruction, that if they use it, we'll wipe them out, was given up, and the strategy changed to the idea that you could use nuclear weapons in a limited way, respond flexibly. That meant for West German soil, for example, the what they call the Operation Zebra. Zebra means if if the Russians should attack our East Bloc nations, we'll stripe here a country like a zebra with nuclear weapons to prevent them from marching east. So I'm very serious about that. This is not fun. I've talked in Denver 2 weeks ago with a former member of the army who was in charge to think about the kilotons they need to blow up various German cities with nuclear weapons. The strategy is to defend the country by committing suicide. I mean, the picture of a zebra is striking too. You just imagine you make more and more stripes of these. The more they march westward, the more stripes you do, and hopefully they stop before they are at the Atlantic Ocean and the French coast, because France would be kind of involved too. That's what strategy is, and that became public in the late 70s. And I mean, it's very understandable that people resist to that. The second reason is, as I mentioned before, the double track decision, the plans for deployment of Pershing 2 and cruise missiles in 1983, if the negotiations fail. As you mentioned, the Soviets feel threatened by this. It's their Cuban Missile Crisis. The Pershing 2 are very sophisticated and accurate weapons. They need about 6 minutes from West Germany to strike in Moscow. So what that means is that the system of defense is put on hair trigger alarm. That's the term for it. If everything is computerized, that means if a computer indicates that the East is launching an attack, there will be an immediate response. What could happen too is that a computer fails, or there are computer errors, as have happened. If you have 6 minutes time to check whether it's an error or not, it could be too late, because you have no time to wait longer than, let's say, 3 or 4 minutes to launch. That's what they call launch upon warning then. So given the deployment of these new missiles, the probability of a nuclear war is increasing, just because of suspicion the others could have launched, or because of a computer error. What that means for you as Americans is important too, because it might be true that the theory of a limited nuclear war is false, that the Russians will launch their missiles toward the United States as soon as they feel that they have about 5 minutes time to react. So what is happening in Europe this in fall and in the Geneva talks affects the United States security. It's not just something they do there. This is you. Yes, please.
How has Germany permitted this to happen? You get 1,000 more heads and...
Yeah. Two things. West Germany is part of the Western Alliance and has bought into the ideology of Cold War for about 20 years after the war. In that phase, the military buildup was going on all over the world, Germany and other countries. That's basically it. And people did not know. This is relatively new stuff for most, the largest share of the population. They have had no knowledge what their generals were planning, the suicidal self-defense. That came up with the peace movement in late 70s. Third reason, a neutron bomb was discussed under Carter, and Carter refused to give the order to build them, and Ronald Reagan found a good date, or a date that seemed appropriate to him to send out the order, and this was the to build them. This was the 6th of August in 81. You will know that this is the Hiroshima Memorial Day, exactly 36 years later. And the neutron bomb stirred up a lot of discussion because it showed in some way the perversity of destruction, that people are killed and it's a clean, what is said, a clean bomb. The houses keep standing and you can use the tanks later on, but the people are killed. And fourth, last not least, what stirred up the European peace movement was the Reagan administration. The election campaign, and as soon as he got into office, he voiced things that were considered scary by Europeans, like his rhetoric about the Soviet Union, that's the focus of evil, and we'll put them in the ash or trash can of history. This is your president who said that. Or if Haig, at that time, I think foreign minister, said there are things more important than peace, and at the same time talking about a limited nuclear war in Europe. I mean, this gives you about a picture how this is perceived on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean. And to put the whole thing, what I've said in a nutshell, would be that the Europeans want to survive. And the feeling in Europe is, in Germany today, is we are trapped between two superpowers.
Do you feel that East Germany would join West Germany should there be a Soviet attack because of the strong feeling of nationalism in the States?
I don't understand your question.
Would East Germany unite with West Germany should there be an attack by the Soviets?
I don't think they have the option to do so.
Well, are most of the Soviet missiles based in East Germany?
No, they're not. The most of the Soviet missiles are in the Soviet Union.
Peter.
Well, I open up here now for, yes.
As a Canadian and a member of Positions for Social Responsibility, yeah. I personally deplore our own government's decision to test the cruise in Canada. I know it's an unarmed missile, but it's an escalation of the arms race to even test such a missile. And I wonder at your reaction to, like the European reaction to the Canadians agreeing to such a test. Now, I know a lot of people say that's a NATO commitment, but there is no commitment that you must test nuclear weapons with or without warheads. So that's not an argument. What do you feel about the Canadians deciding to test cruises on it?
Well, if you were my personal
yes, your personal opinion.
I believe that Canada is a colony of the United States.
Yeah, I agree, and that response, I agree. The response is not an independent response.
Yes, please. Let's just go on.
I'd just like to point out that that map doesn't show tactical nuclear deployment, does it?
I think it does. The little blue spots are. Yeah.
Yes. I haven't decided which is worse about the neutron bomb: the fact that it was advertised as killing people and not killing things, or the fact that, from what I've heard, that's a lie, that actually the neutron bomb would be incredibly dirty. I mean, maybe less dirty. I think somebody said like 10% less dirty than a typical tactical weapon. Either way, I mean, it's like it was advertised that way so that people would feel comfortable about using it in Europe as a tactical weapon. And it was so horrible. The fact that it was to kill people and not things was ghastly, but the fact that that was a lie is maybe even worse. It's just awful.
Yeah.
The lies.
Yes, please.
Oh, no. to publicize in the United States the impeachment that's happening in Europe and in Germany, or some of the things that are taking place, specifically to publicize here?
There are people very knowledgeable, like the Fellowship of Reconciliation, or there are international groups, but you touch a very serious point, the communication between the peace movements is pretty bad. It's improving now slowly, but given the communication of the military and the political powers, we're, you know, in the last century, they, you know, the military is linked by satellites, and it's just a matter of calling a French general in Greece or so and talking about, whereas the peace movement, they have to raise funds and then to pay to buy a ticket for one of the leaders to go over and talk to them, and there is a exchange in the leadership, on the leadership level, but it's not very grassroots oriented. And again, American press is not very objective and not very covery with the European peace movement. I mean, to talk about the reasons would fill another evening, but this is a given fact too. There is more going on than is covered here. Vice versa, in Europe people don't hear about the Livermore actions. Yes.
Peter, I don't think that we're deploying missiles in France like in Germany, are we? I mean, what power does the United States have over Germany that this can happen? I don't want to just blame the United States. I mean, there's something wrong when the German government also allows this to happen, but
or even wants it.
If we get the percentages that, you know, 75% of the German people want our missiles there, then you hear other people that say, no, that's not true, the majority of German people don't. But how can that happen in Germany and not in France?
Well, France is a very different situation. France withdrew from the NATO in the, I guess, in the late 60s. And they have their own nuclear force. You know, the Grand Nation, we make it, we want to be independent, and this French nationalism. The thing today is, in the arms negotiations with the Russians say, we have this number of SS-20, because we add up British and French and American missiles. For us it makes no difference if the missiles come from Great Britain, or if they are deployed in the Netherlands or in Denmark or in West Germany. They are nuclear missiles coming from the west to the east. So if we negotiate arms or nuclear warheads, we want to have them counted. And the French and the British don't like the idea. They want to be considered independent. And this is kind of blockade for the arms negotiations. Yes?
Like the Green Party and stuff, how do the people in Germany who lived through World War II respond to that? What are some of their feelings for it that you hear from out? Say it again?
Yeah.
How do people who lived through World War II respond to the peace movement now, as people are saying, they don't want this war and stuff?
Yeah, I think there is a kind of divided response. Some people say very honestly and very seriously, if I sense that there is a nuclear war coming up, I'll shoot myself. I have heard that so often from people, they are 50 years old or 60 or 70. They say, I have been through that once. I don't want to experience that another time. This is one reaction. You see the depressive mood. I better shoot myself. I don't get into fighting against the missiles, but I'll kill myself. This is what I have heard so many people saying. It's just amazing. Others still are in the think model of the Cold War. They say the Soviets are a threat. I know how it is in Poland and or so. We need the missiles. And another group, which I would consider about about 50% of the population opposes the missiles. The polls taken before the general elections in March showed clearly that the peace movement, or the ideas of a freeze of these Pershing 2s and cruise missiles, was very much favored by at least roughly half of the population. But the issue was not strong enough to prevent again a conservative government to be elected, because the issue of the election in March with Helmut Kohl, our new chancellor, was more an economic issue and not so much a missile issue. Yes?
What's been the role of the Christian Church?
Thank you for the question. I didn't pay him. This is my next paragraph. The Church, the peace movement as an ecumenical event, and again I want to make you sensitive for what has happened. Could anyone tell me how late it is? And I'll speed up.
22.
Okay. In 1948, 3 years after the end of the Second World War, the World Council of Churches, which is now in Vancouver, had a General Assembly in Amsterdam, and they declared war was not compatible with God's will. In 1975, the World Council met again, the fourth time or fifth time, in Nairobi in December, and they had a statement on the arms race. The Church should declare readiness to live without armaments and to work for disarmament. And following this General Assembly, there were committees set up, and the department in the World Council in Geneva called the Program for Disarmament and Against Militarism and Arms Race. This is very important. The World Church was sensitive for that issue, the arms race, before this peace movement in the late 70s, early 80s came about. And from the World Council of Churches, influences came about. Committees were set up and groups started thinking about the problems all over the world already. So what happened later was in 77, and now this is the European focus, in the Netherlands, the Interchurch Peace Council was founded, and they issued a peace manifesto, and they said, I quote, "Get rid of nuclear weapons and start in Holland." Again, that peace manifesto was a response to the World Council of Churches meeting in Nairobi. In 77, "Get rid of nuclear weapons and start in Holland." And what happened then is that this message spread all over Europe. In 1980, the General Synod of the Reformed Church of the Netherlands supported the peace manifesto and issued a pastoral letter to the congregations and said, "We want nuclear disarmament," and they said, "We say no to possession and use of nuclear weapons." This was adopted in 1980 by the General Assembly of the Reformed Church. No to possession and use. No to possession means, in a small country like the Netherlands, that they want to get rid of all already deployed weapons. In the same year, 1980, when it was known that the NATO wanted to build up the nuclear missiles, 500,000 people marched in the streets of Amsterdam. I don't know if some of you are Dutch background, but I think it's about 10% of the whole population that showed up. That would be about 22 million marching in this country for disarmament. This is just an outstanding, had been an outstanding event. And this whole message was called the Hollanditis, or the Dutch disease, spreading all over Europe. No to possession and no to use of nuclear weapons. And this message crossed the borders even to West Germany, and in the Federal Republic we had in 1980 and all the following years in November so-called peace study weeks. This is 1 week where people get together to study the issue. In November 1980, these were about 500 communities or cities that were involved, and in 1982, about 6,000. So you see the increase of commitment to the issue. A peace study week means the churches are heavily involved. This is the answer to your question. They are very often organized by the cluster of churches in a town, or with in coalition with political parties or other initiatives, that you start on Sunday with a peace service, and on Monday you have a discussion group with a member of the army and draft resister or conscientious objector. And on Tuesday you show a film on the Soviet Union and discuss what's the Soviet Union today, and on Wednesday you have this and that and that, and we conclude the weeks on Sunday with a service again. So that means peace study week, and going on all over Germany. Significant have been mass rallies in 81, as Leo Rasmussen mentioned in the first dinner setting, the Kirchentag. This is a, how would you translate it, Tom?
Church days, church festival.
Church festival, church days, where people from all over West Germany come, and international guests, like he has been one this year in Hanover. The Kirchentag in 81 met in Hamburg in North Germany, and there was a rally for peace where 80,000 people joined. So 80,000 Christians marched for peace, and at that rally they decided to have another one in October 81, and 300,000 people showed up in Bonn. And in June 82, as a kind of welcome committee for President Reagan, 350,000 people came to March for Peace. This gives you an impression how deeply the movement is rooted.
Holland disease has spread to Canada too. In May 28th of this year, over 120,000 Canadians were on a walk for peace, 70,000 alone in Vancouver, BC. And that's a lot of people walking anti-truce. And I think a lot of people don't realize the Gallup poll in Canada is that the majority did not want to test the cruise. It was a decision by the Canadian government.
Yeah.
Not the majority of the Canadians.
The church responded with thesis paper. The time is too short now to talk about that. There is one that reaffirms the Heidelberg thesis that says we still have grace period. We cannot speak out against nuclear armaments. This is a kind of necessary evil. And another paper issued by the Reformed Church says, and I just quote from the foreword, the question of peace is a question of confession. That means it has to do with our creed. We cannot ignore the nuclear armaments, because it has to do with God the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. And then they continue, as Germans we live in the focal point of both great military superpowers and in the zone of highest density of nuclear weapons all over the world. We are a launching base and a target of the limited nuclear war that is conceived of by politicians. Out of this dangerous situation, we raise our voice and ask our brothers and sisters all over the world to oppose resolutely the dawning horror of annihilation, and to join with all those who condemn what we as Christians call idolatry as the logic of insanity. The nuclear arms race, which the politicians try to justify as the necessity of defense, was long ago irrationally influenced by helpless fear, worldwide terror, and outbreaks of war. So this is a paper that takes a stance against nuclear weaponry and calls it idolatry and not compatible. Support of nuclear weaponry and support of military buildup and all that is not compatible with Christian faith. This is a very, very strong statement. And it's heavily discussed in the German church. This is what's going on. Finally, the church in the German Democratic Republic, and I'm always happy to that I can talk about that. There is no peace movement in the Western sense, but there is peacemaking done by the church. In January 1980, the Federation of Evangelical Churches, and these are all Lutheran churches, declares in the eastern part of Germany, peacemaking is the main task of the church and is independent from state and government. You have to listen carefully what that means. If within a socialist system, a church as an independent group says, we do our own peacemaking, because the state there claims to be the peacemaker number one. Socialism is peace. That's the ideology. And now they say, well, that's fine, but we have something to share with you. And what they share is, and that might sound very radical, and I think it is, first, that they speak out against hate education on the capitalistic system. Secondly, that they speak out against militarization of the daily life in the DDR. And thirdly, they ask as a church for unilateral initiatives. That means initiatives of the east side, not the west, the east side, for disarmament. And they ask that there are no nuclear weapons deployed on East German soil. They ask for peace education as opposed to defense education in public schools. They say, the images you create in your schools of the enemy are bad. You shouldn't do that. Don't get your kids used to violence. Don't glorify military heroes. This is what the church says in a communist state. Fifth, they have the peace study weeks, as we have in the West. They call it peace decade. In November too, at the same time, and it happens that people from the West travel to the East, and as far as Eastern are let out of their state, they are allowed to speak in the West too. So they have the same type of seminars and lectures and so on, study groups. Sixth, they ask for a social peace service as an alternative to service in the army. They have general conscription. They have no opportunity to for conscientious objection. So what they do, they ask for that. And last not least, they issued a statement in October last year where they say, I quote, no to both the spirit and the logic of deterrence. And then they ask questions. First, may Christians participate in nuclear deterrence? Second, may Christians justify the use of weapons generally as instruments of peacekeeping? Third, may Christians participate in the potentially catastrophic use of nuclear weapons as a threat, just as a threat? May Christians participate in that ideological system threatening the West or the East with nuclear weapons? And the statement concludes, these questions need to be answered soon. And again, this is a church in a relatively oppressed situation. Very courageous, I think. Thank you.
Thank you.